From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, we'll take a look at a ballot amendment to borrow $2 billion to buy new technology for New York school children. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts about the Working Families Party being upset with Governor Cuomo's comments about education. And three environmental groups are suing New York State over the planned use of Clean Water Act funds for the new Tappan Zee Bridge. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The November 4th ballot includes an amendment to borrow $2 billion to buy new technology for school children like iPads and other tablets. Fiscal watchdogs are against it, and the education community has been lukewarm. But with days left to go before voting day, Governor Cuomo, who came up with the idea, finally started to push for it this week. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The Bond Act would permit the state to borrow money to buy iPads and other tablets, plus related technology like better high-speed internet access for school children. It would also pay for new classrooms for expanded pre-kindergarten programs. Cuomo, just days before the election, spoke at length about the $2 billion Bond Act for the first time since the proposal was introduced as part of the budget. The governor says it's the single best thing New York can do to bring better technology to schools.
We jumpstart the technology revolution in education, which is long, long overdue.
Several months ago, Cuomo, perhaps anticipating that voters would approve the proposal, appointed a commission to decide how best to spend the money. The commission members include Google CEO Eric Schmidt. Cuomo, who has long been at odds with teachers, school boards, and others in the education community, says public education is also the largest public monopoly and is resistant to change. He says New York spends the highest amount of money per pupil in the nation, yet gets results that are only in the middle of the pack.
It is not okay on any level, and our kids deserve better than just an average education system.
The language used to describe the amendment is designed to appeal to voters. It will be known as the Smart Schools Bond Act. But fiscal watchdog groups say it might not be such a wise idea. E.J. McMahon of the Empire Center says it doesn't make sense to use 8-year bonds to pay for computer tablets that will be outdated long before the bonds are repaid with interest.
They're assuming that an iPad, a box full of iPads that some school buys next year are still going to be, useful and not obsolete in 2022. Nobody believes that.
The Citizens Budget Commission says New York State is fast approaching its debt ceiling and should limit borrowing. The group points out there has not been any assessment of what schools actually need. The State Board of Regents asked for just $1 million for new computers for school children in its most recent state aid request. The board is staying neutral over whether New Yorkers should approve the Bond Act. Teachers and school administrators did not ask for the funds. They're supportive of the Bond Act, but they have some reservations. The executive director of the New York State School Boards Association, Tim Creamer, says there's a crying need for better technology in the classrooms, and the school boards hope the Bond Act could help with that. But Creamer is also worried about the precedent of borrowing long-term to pay for technology like iPads.
It is a concern. My initial reaction was, is borrowing for that kind of technology that is quickly obsolescent a very good idea?
New York State United Teachers President Karen McGee says teachers welcome additional dollars for technology, but earlier this year she expressed some concerns as well.
Giving kids tablets with no direct instruction and no upgrading along the way and no access to internet, it doesn't serve any purpose. There's a lot of assumptions made when the concept is thrown out. So again, it's all about the details.
As the vote draws near, education groups seem to be loath to lobby against what could essentially be free money for schools. NYSUT is spending $200,000 on a promotional ad campaign to urge passage of the Bond Act. But McMahon with the Empire Center says voting against the Bond Act is not a vote against computer tablets for children or pre-kindergarten.
The Bond Act is not about that. It's about the best way to pay for it. And the good news is, if you want those things, we're already paying for it through annual budget appropriations, which is the better way to pay.
He says the state already has a multi-billion-dollar school building aid fund to construct classrooms, and the education budget includes $38 million for new technology for schools. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Well, Alan, you had a conversation with Ken Lovett yesterday of the Daily News for your Capital Connection program, and he talked about the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, coming into an editorial board meeting and saying, quote, he wanted to break what is, in essence, one of the only remaining public monopolies, the public education system in New York, and now the Working Families Party has launched an attack based on that, quote.
Let's go back in time a little bit there, David. The Working Families Party, which is the progressive side of the Democratic Party, basically, had a convention and is heavily backed by some very strong unions. But there was almost a rebellion by the populace who vote in the Working Families Party, and they wanted Zephyr Teachout. The mayor of New York had to come in and save Cuomo's hash and insist that he be the nominee. And because he has progressive credentials, Bill de Blasio, he won the day. But I have a feeling Cuomo was very angry about this, because what happened was he had to give up on all kinds of liberal things that he might not have been for otherwise. He was for, like a Democratic state senate and some of the other things. Well, as a result of this, we think he went out and formed the Women's Equality Party. And that's going to detract from the Working Families numbers on the ballot. Some people think this was a strategic way of sort of getting even with the Working Families people, because the way that you get a ballot position in New York State is how many votes you got in the last gubernatorial election. So you could be line D or line C or not at all, depending on this. Now, along comes Cuomo, and he alienates the very group that saved him by suggesting that they had a monopoly, their union and their teachers had a monopoly on education in New York. We know he's been fiercely for charter schools, and that was a big fight with Bill de Blasio, too, who ran on an anti-charter school ticket. So where we are now is that Cuomo has really gotten himself into trouble with the Working Families people, and he's in what some people think of as a get-even mood with the Working Families Party.
With the election next Tuesday, could this hurt him at the polls?
David, it's an interesting question you ask. The Working Families Party was in a position to be the alternative to the Democrats if they had done Zephyr Teachout as their candidate. Instead, they didn't. And now, as a result of that, the only other place that the progressives can go in New York State to register a negative comment on Cuomo is going to be the Green Party with Howie Hawkins, who has been polling at an amazing 9 or almost 10%. And if, in fact, Hawkins comes on strong, every single one of those votes for Howie Hawkins will have come out of the Cuomo count. No question about it.
Well, you also had Ken Lovett of the Daily News recount his now famous story, although probably not everybody knows it. But there was a famous phone call that Ken Lovett made to one of the press aides for, I guess, over 50 minutes.
So Ken Lovett, who is one of our favorites here at Public Radio, the Daily News, excellent correspondent and columnist, calls one of the top aides to Cuomo, Josh Vlasto, and Vlasto thinks he's sending Lovett's call to voicemail. Instead, he really answers the call. So Lovett hears the entire conversation, and it goes on for almost an hour. And it's a strategy session on how they're going to defeat their opponents politically, because that's the way you do it. And of course, Lovett, being a very good reporter, then follows up and asks questions based on what he heard, and they deny there was even a meeting. Well, Cuomo writes about this in his book, still righteously angry that Lovett had listened in on his conversation and maintaining that Lovett was guilty of a felony because he was listening in. Well, of course, that's nonsense. They picked up the phone call and he was on the other end, and they actually called his publishers and his editors and said they were gonna have him arrested. It's a terrific story. But why Cuomo put it in the book, I'll never know, because it doesn't make him look good.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Another one of the ballot measures facing New York voters this election day has the potential to eliminate what advocates say is millions of dollars in waste by requiring the legislature to go paperless. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard.
According to language in New York's Constitution dating back to 1938, all bills up for consideration placed before lawmakers must be printed on paper. Now New Yorkers could vote to make Albany go digital. Proposition 2 would require the bills to be distributed electronically. The most vocal cheerleader for the change has been Capital Region Republican Assemblyman James Todisco of the 112th District. Over the past several years, Todisco has pushed for the measure, posting photos of towering stacks of paper on lawmakers' desks. After a debate Monday evening, Todisco was confident the amendment would pass.
It's a win-win-win. We're going to save $53 million a year, get all that paper, all that printing, all that waste. We're going to save our pristine trees, and Mother Earth is going to be smiling when that passes, I believe. And we're going to be more effective and more efficient.
Todisco's estimate includes the $13 million required to print the paper bills and another $40 million to dispose of them. The measure to modernize has been met with little opposition. The League of Women Voters online voter guide reads, quote, "The League of Women Voters of New York State could not identify any organizations or expressed opinions in opposition to this amendment," unquote. When the measure was before lawmakers, the state Senate voted unanimously to approve it. In the Assembly, only one lawmaker voted against it. That lawmaker, Assemblywoman Shelley Mayer, a Democrat from Yonkers, said her symbolic vote against the bill wasn't because she was opposed to going digital.
Whether the bill is in paper in a readable form or online in a readable form, the point is it needs to be in a form where legislators and staff actually read the bills. The fact is the paper on our desk in the Assembly and the Senate is not in readable form, so I think that that's a very valid complaint. But I always am concerned as we move to a more paperless system that there could be a tendency to be less mindful that the words on the page really mean something.
Other statewide ballot questions include an amendment to revise the state's redistricting procedures that has split good government groups, and a question on whether the state could borrow up to $2 billion to help upgrade and enhance technology in public and nonprofit schools. Election Day is November 4th.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
Three environmental groups are suing New York State agencies and officials over the planned use of Clean Water Act funds for the construction activities surrounding the replacement Tappan Zee Bridge. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
Riverkeeper, Waterkeeper Alliance, and Environmental Advocates of New York Monday filed a lawsuit in state Supreme Court in Albany against New York State officials, seeking to ensure that federal Clean Water Act funds will not be used in building the new Tappan Zee Bridge or for future projects. Mark Yagi is executive director of Waterkeeper Alliance.
This attempted diversion of funds is bad for our country. It has the potential to set a dangerous national precedent. If New York gets away with this overreach, the state will be creating a blueprint for other states to use to raid Clean Water Act funds.
Riverkeeper President Paul Gallet adds,
"The stakes are too high to let this illegal raid on clean water restoration funding go through without a fight."
The lawsuit names the Department of Environmental Conservation, Environmental Facilities Corporation, Thruway Authority, and Public Authorities Control Board, as well as 18 individuals involved with these agencies. The suit comes after the Environmental Protection Agency in September disqualified more than $481 million of $511 million in loans to the Thruway Authority for projects related to building the estimated $3.9 billion new New York Bridge, connecting Rockland and Westchester counties. EPA allowed 30 days for the state to appeal and has since granted a 30-day extension. In an emailed statement, EFC spokesman John Sorensen says the additional time will allow EFC and the others to further emphasize the merits and legitimacy of the environmental protection projects and their benefits to the Hudson River estuary. Sorensen says the financing in question will reduce project costs by up to $35 million and help keep future bridge tolls as low as possible. He says EFC intends to vigorously defend its right to finance Clean Water Act projects that benefit the Hudson River estuary, as well as toll payers. Officials with the environmental groups contend that not only are clean water funds ineligible for bridge construction projects, but the public was deprived of its rights to participate in the decision process. Riverkeepers Galley alleges the funding amount the EPA is allowing did not go through the proper process.
So we're in court to make sure that the 95% that's been disallowed stays disallowed, and we're also in court challenging the remaining 5% because it denies the public their right to be heard as to the propriety of the loan.
Democratic Assemblyman Thomas Albinanti criticizes the state's hiring an outside law firm to appeal the EPA decision.
This is a meritless appeal. It's a waste of time, and it's a waste of money.
Albinanti, whose district includes the Westchester side of the Tappan Zee Bridge as well as the site of the new bridge, also opposes the use of clean water funds for bridge construction projects.
Why are we wasting money on expensive counsel just to get the right to borrow money? I could understand if this were a grant, it would be worth the effort, but it's only the right to borrow. The federal government has already given us a large loan. Why do we have to have another loan?
Environmental Advocates of New York Executive Director Peter Iwanowitz questions why the state turned to outside counsel.
We posed those questions to the state and actually filed a Freedom of Information request with the DEC as well as the Environmental Facilities Corp to seek the actual nature of the contract, who the contract is with, and what it's costing the state to hire outside counsel. Why they chose this route rather than staying in-house with their own counsel at EFC and DEC, or why they didn't use the services available by the Attorney General's office is a question for the agencies. They haven't told us why.
EFC spokesman John Sorensen says the law firm was selected through a competitive process, and total costs will not be known until the appeals process is complete. He adds that preserving the flexibility that the Clean Water Act affords the state to administer the funds and defending against EPA's overreach is a worthy investment. Environmental advocates say clean water funding should be used to help the state's crumbling wastewater infrastructure. Again, Waterkeeper Alliance's Yagi.
In the vernacular of the holiday season, the state's economic trick is not a treat for the environment and for our clean water.
Officials say so far no funds have been transferred from EFC to the Thruway Authority. A DEC spokesman referred a request for comment to the EFC spokesman. Others did not reply in time for this broadcast.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A nationwide push to reduce bank card fraud is paving the way for consumers to use smartphone apps to purchase goods. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports now on Bitcoin, which is on the cutting edge of the digital currency revolution.
You've seen the headlines, breach after breach of major retailer credit card security, and mounting criticism of the U.S. electronic payment system has thrust the spotlight on digital currency and apps for your smartphone or tablet that trump using a bank card to pay for purchases when it comes to safety and security. Many stores no longer accept checks. Some are reluctant to take cash, marking your legal tender with counterfeit banknote detection pens. The obvious way to pay going forward is an electronic one, but there are competing systems. Google Wallet, Apple Pay, and a mobile payment platform still in testing called Currency, which, despite being not ready for prime time, has two major pharmacies, CVS and Rite Aid, favoring it. Apple Pay worked at the drugstore chains and at a host of other stores until retailers turned off their scanners. Fortune magazine explains there's a Walmart-led consortium, MCX, short for Merchant Customer Exchange, backing those Square, QR, quick response codes, instead of the NFC or near-field communications system that Apple and Google use. Currency opens up the possibility for many digital currencies, including Bitcoin. Dave Ripley is co-founder and CEO of Glidera, a digital currency venture headquartered in Chicago.
The way Bitcoin works is that you effectively obtain a Bitcoin wallet, which is used to both store your Bitcoin and transfer Bitcoin to other individuals or companies or entities. After you get a wallet, the next thing you need to do is obtain some Bitcoin. There are many ways to do that. Right now here in the U.S., there's a number of different exchanges and services that are beginning to emerge where you can actually buy Bitcoin.
One can buy Bitcoin in downtown Albany, home to the first Bitcoin ATM in New York, located at Paul Petrakis's Clinton Square Coffee Shop, CT at HB.
A lot of folks are unbanked within the United States and in the world in developing countries. And what Bitcoin does is it provides a way of a global commerce without a need of a bank.
It's as simple as downloading an app to your smartphone or tablet.
People try to compare Bitcoin to PayPal, and there it really isn't a comparison. PayPal uses our existing banking system and the U.S. dollars, whereas Bitcoin has its own unit of account. And it's actually a peer-to-peer system, so it doesn't rely on a third party. So it's one person to another through cryptography, which is a technology that encrypts the money transfer.
Dave Ripley says there are a number of merchants currently accepting Bitcoin, including
Dell.com, Dish Network, Expedia, Cheap Air, Tiger Direct. And there are starting to be some, quote-unquote, bricks and mortar businesses that accept Bitcoin as well, right there in their actual retail locations.
Benjamin Losky, superintendent of financial services for the state of New York, has decided that New York will not require digital currency software developers to obtain a BIT license to operate in the state. That removes a layer of red tape and paves the way for system advances. But far from settled is the ongoing debate as to whether Bitcoin is a currency, a commodity, or both? Again, Dave Ripley.
Bitcoin is very similar to gold in that it has properties of a commodity. Effectively, it is a commodity. In addition to being a commodity, much the same as gold, it actually has very strong properties as a form of currency or money, being a strong store of value and a medium of exchange and unit of account. Therefore, Bitcoin is effectively both a commodity first and, as its usage grows as a medium of exchange, it will grow into becoming used as a currency and taking on currency properties.
Launched in 2009, Bitcoin predates both Apple Pay and Google Wallet. The internet-based, decentralized digital currency is currently worth about $350. Bitcoin prices have been extremely volatile. They've fallen as low as $275 and hovered around $1,100 in December 2013.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1444. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustino.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers. Representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.